Quiet time. Grace Baptist Christian School, the evangelical nonprofit I attended from first to fourth grade, was for the most part every bit as awful a place as it no doubt sounds. The curriculum, devised sometime in the late 17th century, was hung from the twin pillars of ever-present discipline and ceaseless interdiction. Spare the rod and spoil the child, a common refrain in those days. By which measure, my classmates and I were far from spoiled. Indeed, we endured all manner of corporal punishment, ear boxings and knuckle rappings, painful pinchings and skin twistings, ritual spankings carried out before the class with unseemly relish. We were likewise subjected to a steady diet of humiliation, petty, mean-spirited chastenings intended to isolate and neuter all indications of individuality and brightness, bleaching whatever was pure and unique in us to the lusterless hue of the common. At Grace, the amorphous boundaries of our innocent but exuberant souls were bound like Chinese feet in strictures of obedience and moral rectitude, hobbling each of us, to some degree, for life. The first and second grade classes were presided over by the last of the genuine school marms, Miss Lindquist and Miss Clatterbuck. Though well shy of 60, they were nevertheless exceedingly old. The one tall and spare, the other short and even more spare, they were specters worthy of Bunyan, desiccated beings of flake and powder. As if seeking to figure constriction and denial, they tucked the parchment-like skin of their necks into collars of ancient lace, gathered and pinned their coarse gray hair into the severest of buns, compressed their lips into ashen rictuses. The black wool of their simple dresses whispering about the ankles of their plain black boots, they drifted through their classrooms, ever alert for signs of the devil, manifest in a slackening of posture, say, or a slight waning of attention. Meanwhile, we sat silently at our wooden desks, feet dangling above the floor, applying ourselves as diligently as our wayward minds allowed to deciphering our McGuffey's eclectic readers and transferring Old Testament verses from the blackboard to oat-colored sheets of ruled paper. After 2 years spent wandering the marms' neo-Gothic bardo, we advanced to the third grade class of Mr. Larson. A fervent army reservist, this bloodless, gangle-limbed man did not begin each day by leading us in a toneless recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance, as might have been expected, but rather with a solo performance of Onward, Christian Soldiers, rendered with menacing fortissimo on his unmuted trumpet. A compulsive hand-washer and ceaseless nitpicker, his life was given over to the securing of our undivided attention. The hundredfold sentence, "I will not talk in class," the dunce's corner in the back of the head slap, were his stock in trade. Of the fourth grade, I recall only numerous incarcerations in a darkened coat closet, atonement, presumably, for various minor transgressions. As for the rest, the coursework, the face of my teacher, or even his name, an image of the best friend I must surely have had, I remember nothing. Which is probably for the best. I have long since learned that such regions of voided memory are best left unexplored. What did they want, these grim beings into whose care we had been placed? Even now, I am not entirely sure. That their lives were bereft of joy goes without saying. They inhabited a world made of odorless, tasteless porridge, a world without sound, without volition. I often think their intent was simply to turn us into fellow inmates of the moribund prison to which they had, for some reason or other, consigned themselves. A project which required that we be separated from our natural inclination to wonder, our native delight at the miracle of being in the world. We were not at grace to tilt our faces to the sky, to marvel at the warmth of the sun and send our imaginations aloft to merge with the passing clouds. We were not there to lie down on the cool grass beside the chapel and listen to the earth hum, to raise an eager hand in class and inquire, in all seriousness, after the difference between a tree and the word tree. We were there to be taught. Which meant learning to sequester what was alive in us, to separate the irrepressible from the easily managed, to bottle up our abundance and bury it somewhere deep inside, forever out of reach. The goal, in short, was to break us, as they themselves had been broken, to prod and cajole and chastise until such point as we accepted, as they had, the bit and the harness. In which aim, it must be admitted, they were largely successful. And yet it was only on such a drab canvas of censure and constraint that certain bold gestures could be laid down, vivid marks indelibly etched upon my still pliant self, flashes of anti-grace that stood for my true education. Moments of impish defiance for the most part, as when James Pappas preempted Miss Lindquist's customary punishment for talking without permission by walking with exaggerated solemnity to the craft station, taking two long pieces of tape from the dispenser and taping his own mouth shut. Or the day Elia Rodriguez, the smartest student in class, submitted all her answers, from written work to verbal response, in Spanish, calmly deflecting each of Mr. Larson's subsequent tantrums with a superior, enigmatic smile. Eric Ross went an entire week purposely wearing his shoes on the wrong foot, leaving a litter of ruffled, apoplectic presbyters in his wake. And then there was quiet time. Lights off, hands folded and placed on desktops, heads bowed, eyes closed. Nobody talking. Nobody moving. Our cheerless warders no doubt considered quiet time to be the well-earned fruit of their endless browbeating, the purest expression of their dominion. A room full of children suspended in a hush of muted light, absolutely still and absolutely quiet. In truth, quiet time was a blunder on their part, a tactical error of the kind committed by petty tyrants for as long as there have been petty tyrants. For no sooner had they succeeded in forcing us to banish our ownmost selves to the inner regions of our heads Then they set us loose in those very regions. For 10 minutes each day, beneath the self-satisfied gaze of a Clatterquist or a Larson, we were reunited, shadow to shape, with our exiled being, free to roam the fuzzy terrain of unfettered imagination, to explore limitless realms of our own making, to romp as we saw fit. I say we, because I know I was not alone in taking advantage of these brief infinities. I know, for example, that Ronald Morgan maintained an imaginary sanctuary for frogs and salamanders and blue-bellied lizards. Kim Paulson danced and caroled and picked apples with the March sisters. Sue Holland authored an alternate version of biblical history, one in which Moses became Pharaoh, Goliath routed the Israelites, and the Tower of Babel was built to completion. And me? Upon lights out, I bowed my head and shut my eyes, let myself drift in the dazzle of tiny lights transiting the inner surface of my tightly closed lids. In a matter of moments, this glittering field became an endless space, a vault of stars expanding in all directions, depositing me somewhere deep inside myself. Untethered from the reality of the classroom, I floated on an endless inner sea, a metaphysical Sinbad journeying to strange and distant lands, to the hiding places of things that mattered most to me. I traveled to these secret worlds in swift caravels and glass rockets and hot air balloons, in submarines and ice schooners. I took up residence in marble castles and rickety lean-tos, in monumental ziggurats and remote cabins sheathed in snow. I rode winged horses and talked to animals. I was Puss in Boots, a migrating swallow, a wise and mighty oak, a wild thing with feline eyes and flowering antlers and a turtle shell. I was a whispering zephyr, a marble statue come to life, a dust mote gamboling in a column of sunlight. It was quiet time, and I was, if only for 10 minutes, me.